covering the crew all season long on WTMJ. It's Brewers Extra Innings. Now live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee at the Avenue. Here is your host, Dominic Cotroneo.
Well, of all of the games, that was certainly one of them, right? Wow. 10-8 the final. The Reds win. That doesn't even begin to tell you the story. You're thinking, oh, wow, slugfest, you know, back and forth, right? Nope. Oh, so they played really tight defense in that one. Nope. So the pitching was really terrible, huh? No. There was just so many ways to interpret that game. At one point, the Brewers were down 8-0. They clawed back. They never tied the game back up. But the biggest moment of the game was a big mistake in center field. Defensive mistakes were a big theme all night long. I'm Dominic Cotroneo, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. If you want to join us here on the program to call in or text in, please to be joined also by Craig Kishon. Craig, this was, like I said, a game of all games, but if this is how the Reds-Brewers rivalry is going to begin in 2024, sign me up for 12 more, hopefully. Sorry, we don't have Craig yet, I guess, so we're going to pivot here and get to the three most important plays of this game. And the first play, as I hinted at the defense here, the defense of the Brewers, specifically Reese Hoskins. Reese wants to flush this one ASAP. We pick things up in the fourth inning. The inning is starting off inauspiciously, really. A leadoff broken bat single by Tyler Stevenson. Ellie De La Cruz poked one the other way. Put runners on first and second. Nobody out. Santiago Espinal, the batter. He only had one hit at this point in the whole season, and he was giving himself up, but the Brewers kicked it around.
The one pitch squares to bunt, drops the bunt. Third base side, a good one. Fielded by Ortiz. He's got only one play at first. He throws it low. Hoskins doesn't catch it. It rolls underneath his glove and all the way to the tarp. Two runs will score on that error. All the way to third goes Espinal. Here's the throw from Contreras, and that's not in time. On the Brewers' third error of the night, the Reds played two and doubled their lead. It's 4-0. Probably the second throwing error on Joey Ortiz in this game.
It was ruled a throwing error on Ortiz, but I think Reese Hoskins would tell you he should have had that one. He made an error in the first inning as well. That was a ball that he should have had, and he missed it. He just flat out missed it on a play that a guy is giving up himself up for an out. The Brewers could not get an out, and two runs score, and the inning would snowball from there against Aaron Ashby. Next batter, Will Benson, hit an RBI double, then a walk and a double steal, then another RBI double by Spencer Steer. A lot of this damage coming with two strikes, and we'll break that down a little bit later with Craig Kishon. Second most important play of the game, as the Brewers started to show some life. Again, they were down 8-0 at one point, heading to the top of the fifth inning. And the Brewers showed some life with a leadoff walk to Sal Frelick. But the next two guys grounded out, Hoskins and Churio. Turan connected on his first homer of the year. Ortiz started a little rally here with a couple of singles. And then in the sixth inning with Willy Adames up at the plate, maybe trying to start a spark.
High fly ball, deep right field. Fairchild back at the track at the wall. And he brought it back. Stuart Fairchild just robbed Willy Adames of a home run. Wow. Timed it perfectly, climbed the wall. That ball is gone if he doesn't pull it back.
That would have made it a 9-4 ball game. Instead, it remained 9-3, but the Brewers would respond with three more runs in the inning, aided by a two-run opposite field double by Bryce Turang. Then, in the seventh inning, a two-run homer by Christian Yelich made it a one-run game. It was 9-8, heading to the bottom of the seventh inning. And perhaps the biggest play of the game was the big mistake by the center fielder, Sal Frelick.
Ellie De La Cruz lines one into center. Hanging on up. In comes Frelick. Oh, he went into a dive, and it got past him. Rolling all the way to the track, and De La Cruz can burn. He's to third. He's being waved around. Adames makes a relay to the plate. It hits the mound. Ellie dives in safely with an inside-the-park home run.
Just can't make that gamble against a guy like Ellie De La Cruz. And obviously, it didn't end up mattering in the end, given the Brewers did not score another run for the final two frames. But a one-run game and a two-run game are very different feelings. The Brewers never climb back to tie things up, and they end up falling by a 10-8 final. Get to a couple of texts here. This one, David in Superior. Would have liked to see Frelick knock that ball down rather than letting it go to the fence, even though it was not a difference maker. Tough to see Ellie De La Cruz score on us. Agreed entirely. Looking at it last year for Ellie De La Cruz, after he stole home on July 8th, remember the embarrassment and the struggle of having to deal with all of that, then after that steal of home, the Brewers contained him to 3-for-29 with 12 strikeouts, and the Brewers went 6-1 against the Reds the rest of the way. Well, today they start 0-1 on a two-homer game from Ellie De La Cruz. In fact, they did not retire Ellie De La Cruz in today's game. And with that, we'll welcome in Craig Kishon here to the program. As we were opening up the show, Craig, I was saying this was a game of all games just because it was a game. There's no one way to describe it, but for me, the number one headline from this game was this was the anomaly of the Brewers' defense. What an odd day with the leather for the Crew.
Yeah, really. Really disappointing from that standpoint because, look, it's early, Dom, and we know how good the defense is for this team. But to commit three errors to open up the gates for an 8-0 deficit, obviously we haven't seen that yet tonight. We'll probably see that down the road, hopefully way down the road. But it's just one of those nights. And look, they fought back, man. They kept going, which is like, all right, yeah, we're not used to committing these errors and whatnot, but they fought back, and that's the bottom line. So that's one of the few silver linings tonight for sure.
And I know Reese had an awful game. I know Sal certainly regrets diving on that ball for Ellie De La Cruz.
Yeah.
But let's be real. I mean, it's one game. You flush and you move on. It's a cliche. I get it. It's okay that this game happens in April. You just hope it doesn't burn you. You got four games in Cincinnati. This was game one. It's not the end of the world. You mentioned the fighting back. And I also look at this, like we said, this is not going to be the way the Brewers play all season long. That fourth inning was just a house of horrors, quite frankly. A guy trying to give himself up for the bunt, you throw it away, / Reese missing it. A bunch of two-strike hits in there, too. I thought Ashby pitched so much better than his line indicates.
Well, and the worst part I thought about what we saw to Ashby tonight, Dom, and you go back, let's face it, it's been 18 months since he's been pitching at the big league level. But unfortunately, the house of horrors continues for him defensively. For whatever reason, this guy is clearly snake bit to a certain point of when balls are put in play, it's just been a tough out. It's been a hard out. It's been a not easy out. However you want to explain it, it's just been that way for the Brewers. And certain pitchers go through this in their careers, and he's experienced a lot early. And I think, during the whole time where this is, he hasn't been on the mound and he's been battling back, it's just been, one of these situations where, okay, it's coming right back. All right. So what more can he do? Every pitcher wants to go on the mound, and you know this. Hey, pitch the ball, put the ball in play, and see what happens. And if you have a good defense, chances are you're going to come out of there 100% of the time. But tonight and so many times in the past, not the same.
And for Ashby, a guy that's, yes, he's got wicked stuff pre-shoulder injury and had a little more velo than he showed tonight. But I was encouraged by the fact that we saw 94s and even a couple of 95s in there.
Yeah.
With a little more command than maybe we were used to. Yes, he had two walks. One of those walks was extremely competitive in that spiraling fourth inning to Stuart Fairchild. Otherwise, I thought he was really dominant in the zone. He just didn't quite have the refinement to get strikeouts with two strikes. And a guy that had a 57% ground ball rate the last time we saw him, he needs to have good defense behind him, which is why the Brewers started Joey Ortiz at third and not Oliver Dunn. Dunn was the DH today, and Ortiz at third, knowing there was going to be a lot of action over there at third base today. And it still didn't work out in their favor, but I look at Ashby's outing today. He did his job in getting ground balls. Yes, he would like the home run back to Will Benson, but that was an unearned run because of an error earlier in that inning. He had a leadoff walk in the third, then retired the next three batters in order against the top of the order, and then we've talked about the poor defense behind him with the error on the sack bunt, the bad hop on Rhys Hoskins in that fourth inning, and it just snowballed on him, and things can snowball quickly when you haven't had big league reps in 18 months, like you said.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, it really is, and it's such a difference maker. So, you know, a couple of things. You know, I look at tonight, and I'm like, okay, you know, Aaron Ashby, he hasn't been out there in a while, and you can't expect right out of the gates, you know, a miraculous outing. Because, look, if that's the case, he's pitching lights out, and the defense behind him is also doing their job lights out. All right, so part of that didn't work out tonight for him. But, you know, here's the other thing, and I'll ask you this, Dom. You were at spring training for the entirety. I was there for a very small portion of it, and I did see Ashby out on the mound, on the side mound, when he's still working through his rehab, and he's looking pretty good. But his velo at the time when I was there at the end of February, beginning of March, I mean, we're talking low 90s. And like you're just saying, like tonight, 94, 95 maybe. Look, those are the things that you're looking for a month, 5 weeks later, and saying, are you getting back to where you need to be? This is a process. And so this is how I'm looking at Aaron Ashby's night tonight. But you tell me, like, I'm just asking you, you were there every day. You tell me what you think of that.
I agree. I think this was a great starting point, given this is a new normal for Aaron. And what I mean by that is he's not the guy with 97 and sink and late ride and that sort of movement anymore. And I tweeted the sequence that he had against Jamer Candelario, which was a really important sequence at the time. The Brewers were down 2-0, and it ended the third inning with a man on second base. He gets a get-me-over curveball. He threw a really good changeup that was called a ball. It was in the shadow of the zone. It could have gone either way. Then he dots a sinker on the inside corner, makes Jamer uncomfortable, batting from the right side as a switch hitter. And then he gets him to swing and miss on a changeup. He throws three different pitches. He gets a swing and miss on his best one, the changeup. He didn't need to overpower him because he doesn't have that 97 anymore, but he was on the edges of the zone all day. That is pitching. That is not throwing. And I thought that was something he could build on. And yes, there was a lot of contact against him today. And I'm not saying he's totally absolved of guilt in this. Way too much contact with two strikes. But again, you, like you just said, you cannot expect the world from him in his first start back in the big leagues, especially against a team that's built on chaos and putting the ball in play and having such great talent like Ellie De La Cruz, like Will Benson, like Encarnacion Strand. They are a very good club over on the other half. But I agree, today was an encouraging sign from Aaron Ashby. This text from Ricky in Honey Creek: what a frustrating game. Almost made an extraordinary comeback. Yelly hit a homer, but Ellie De La Cruz owns the Brewers. Yeah, I mean, they kind of owned him in the second half of last year, so don't give up on that so far. But we got to take our first break of the show before I fall behind here. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Fifth Third Bank, with a local Milwaukee team. Fifth Third Bank also knows how to hit it out of the park. They've been serving businesses in the area for nearly 15 years, offering industry-specific expertise and local decision-making capabilities can help your business succeed. This is commercial banking value that only Fifth Third can deliver. Fifth Third Bank, National Association, member FDIC. You can join us at 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. Brewers fall 10-8. They are now 6-3 on the young season. Stay with us. Brewers Extra Innings rolls on after this.
Welcome back to Brewers Extra Innings.
Welcome back. I'm Dominic Catronio. Craig Kishon is with us as well. Brewers fall 10-8 tonight. This was a weird, frustrating game for the Brewers. This one, Mason from Stevens Point. Weird game all around, but dang, Ashby did look good. Way better than I anticipated. It was really the odd defense that made his line look like that. Do you think this could be a game changer for the rotation? I think they're going to roll with the six-man rotation for the time being. They really need some length out of Joe Ross tomorrow. We know they're not going to get length out of Wade Miley on Wednesday. and they really need length out of Freddy Peralta on Thursday. So the ball is in Joe Ross's court to make sure that this does become an impact for the rotation. But, yeah, I think this could be helpful in the meantime while Jacob Junis gets healthy. Then you kind of kick that can down the road of, all right, what's the decision going to be when Junis is healthy? And if you're confident with Ashby, you can make sure that Junis gets healthy. How do you feel about all that, Craig?
Well, I think that's right on. And I honestly, you know, we can predict all this stuff even through this series against Cincinnati, but it's still a work in progress for this team. And I think you have to maybe at best every other game right now in the rotation, kind of with a grain of salt. I mean, we don't know what this rotation is going to look like when it's going to hit its prime. Because right now it's not in its prime. Right out of the gates, this rotation is not a prime rotation. It's still like we're still waiting for Miley to get back. We're still waiting for, you know, Aaron Ashby to, you know, come back after being out for 18 months, like we saw tonight. So there, I mean, it's an evolution. It's a process. So to me, even look, I'm not lying. I'm looking at the forecast this week for Cincinnati, and I'm thinking this is a 4-game series. Tonight might be the only game they play for all we know for the weather, to be honest with you. So we don't know what's going to happen with the rotation itself. We know what Freddie's going to give us, but that's about it right now. So everything else is a little bit of a question mark. There's no guarantees as the week progresses. So I don't know, man. I'm just taking a step back on this, and I'm going to see what Mother Nature's bringing me on Tuesday night.
And sometimes you talk to teams, and they don't want, you know, 2 days off in a row, that sort of thing. You talk to any number one seed, and they don't want that. You know, we've seen the last few years in the playoffs with baseball anyway. But I do want to give some flowers here and some kudos as we get ready to wrap up the pitching conversation and shift to the offense here. We haven't even mentioned the bullpen went 4 1/3, only allowed 2 runs, and really they should have only allowed 1. If Sal keeps that ball in front of him and doesn't try to make a hero play for Ellie De La Cruz, it's just one moonshot for Ellie De La Cruz, a 450-foot blast off of J.B. Bukauskas. Otherwise, the bullpen did not allow another run today. I thought they were, and we saw Pyomps get back on the horse today. Hudson had the bad luck against him with Freelix Gamble, but Bryce Wilson had a 1-2-3 eighth. Bukauskas recovered otherwise other than the homer to Ellie. The bullpen is a big reason why the Brewers were able to even have the chance to come back in this game.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, look, how many teams are down 8-0 and really have a realistic chance of not only being in the game but having a chance to win this game? So you're 100% correct there, and it's really too bad because as well as the bullpen pitched here tonight, they deserved better. But this is baseball too. This is the 162 of the whole thing. You know, as good as the bullpen looked and saved this club in the first, you know, 5 or so games of the season, and you had all this like, hey man, look at, you know, the bullpen's gonna do well in all this, but they can't do it every single night. And there's gonna be nights where, you know, tonight they look marvelous and don't get anything to show for it. So but it's about being competitive, and that's the bottom line. You don't want to lose games and get your teeth kicked in. And that's what tonight looked like from the beginning. I mean, it looked that way through the first 5 innings. But in a 9-inning game like this, they allow the offense to chip away and come back. And they deserve a lot of credit for that. And you're right. You know, like with Pyamps, for sure. You know, the whole comeback thing, get back on that horse. Let's go. I think they did well, and hopefully that will continue on.
855-616-1620 if you want to join us on the show. This one from Mike in Colorado. 3 or 4 errors, really? Last year the Brewers would have lost a game like this 10-2, maybe even less. It was really encouraging that they rallied back and could have won with another hit or two. Liking this crew team a lot. And let's talk about that offense a little bit here, shall we? It all began, I'm going to kind of go out here. I'm going to go off the beaten path for something I noticed that isn't in the box score, that's mundane otherwise. And quite frankly, you may hear this and think, well, Dom, of course. So, fifth inning, Brewers are down 8-0. They have not shown anything yet. A leadoff walk from Sal Frelick. He's on second base. Jackson Churio with one out hits a routine grounder to third. And over there, Encarnacion Strand kind of took his time with it. And all of a sudden, Churio almost beat it by a half step. In an 8-0 game with a man on second in the fifth inning. That is exactly what Pat Murphy was talking about in spring training. Need him to take it a little more seriously. Need him to notice what it takes to be a big leaguer, to be a 20-year-old in the big leagues. You got to hustle everything out because you have a tool with your legs. He was out. It was the second out of the inning. But all of a sudden, from that moment on, the Brewers' offense came alive. And I'm not saying, like, oh, yeah, they all were inspired by Jackson Churio. But sometimes something as mundane as that is encouraging to say, wait, the 20-year-old is busting his tail up the line. Come on, let's get a run or two here and see what happens. And then, boom, Bryce Terang hits a home run two pitches later.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You just don't know, Dom, like, what goes in with the whole chemistry of that dugout. The appreciation that the rest of this team has for a guy that just turned 20 years old. There are no regrets. There are no, there's no jealousy line. There's no, I'm not going to admire this guy. There's no, I'm not going to appreciate this guy. There's no going to be, this guy's taking my spot. He's only 19, 20 years old. There's nothing like that. This club has it going. And they know that Jackson Churio is going to be a key for them. If they're going to do some special things down the road, yes, there's one thing to do it out of the gates in April and to prove your worth and to get some experience and to build some chemistry. But I think it's the whole build the chemistry thing. You know, these guys appreciate him and he appreciates this team here right now. And I think he appreciates, you know, Pat Murphy, the manager, and giving him opportunities in different looks. I'm not sure, like, neither one of us, Dom, know what Jackson Churio had ever envisioned if he made this club, what role he'd play. I think that's all literally playing out here right now, game to game. So I think that's all great. And you know what? You have to look at the little things in baseball, like you're just pointing out right now, because this is what makes this game great. You just don't know what's going to spark a team. And if you still have time and you still have outs and you still have innings left, anything can happen. And down 8-0 tonight, this is an impressive loss. A weird way to put it, but this is an impressive loss.
Yeah, I like that. I think it really was. And it's not worth anything in the big leagues, but hey, at a ballpark like Great American, anything is possible. I've got to take another break here, and we got to talk about Bryce Terang and what he's done so far early in the season. Christian Yelich, what he's done early in the season. And also William Contreras, another great day for Wild Bill. Stay with us, 855-616-1620. Again, 855-616-1620. Stay with us. Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
You're listening to Brewers Extra Innings, presented by Fifth Third Bank on WTMJ.
Last segment here with Craig Kishon on WTMJ. The Brewers fall by a 10-8 final score to the Reds, but that doesn't even begin to tell the story of this one. Let me start with Bryce Terang, because I am absolutely loving the start that we have seen from Bryce Terang. And I'll give the credit to his manager, Pat Murphy. He was making this call in, like, mid-March, already declaring Bryce Terang would be his opening day second baseman. Now, of course, the Brewers faced a lefty, so he wasn't technically the opening day second baseman. But then he's been the primary second baseman, of course, against lefties. He expected him to make a quantum leap, and by all accounts, this first week and a half of the season, I believe him. Two hits again today, including his first homer of the year, an RBI double as well, four runs batted in today, two runs scored. To have Bryce Terang doing what he's doing with the bat, and oh, by the way, he's a perfect 7-for-7 in steals, that's a dynamic player all of a sudden at the bottom half of your order.
Boys, but, yeah, I mean, look, what isn't he doing right, and he's doing nothing wrong. Okay, let's just put it all out there right now for him. And I think really, Dom, I think the bottom line is a really good point that, you know, you brought up. It's just simply the fact that Murph saw this relatively early in spring training. And look, if you're following, if you're a Brewer loyalist and you're following this team every single day, all of the coverage that Dom has brought you along the way, and anybody else from, you know, Adam McKelvey, Todd Rosiak, everybody that covers the Brewers on a daily basis. Murph has said some similar things like this about certain players that he's loved, and Bryce has been in that mix. But here's the thing. This is a different voice. It's a different manager. It's a different age group. It's a different era of a person leading the group here for these young guys. And I think Bryce is, you know, one of these guys so far this season that's embraced the change in leadership for this team. And he's living up to, I think, expectations that maybe were brought upon, you know, from Double A situation on up here. And I think, you know, what we're seeing right now is we're seeing a guy that's developing into a true major leaguer and where he should be at this point. And does he have, room for growth? Absolutely. But this is a great jump from a year ago. Everybody can start their major league career and have a great first month, and he did last year. But I think, you know, we're clearly seeing some different things. You know, his dedication during the off season, his body's different, his mindset's different. Obviously, his approach to plate and his adjustments has already been different. So this has been fun to watch so far, but it's also, look, it from his perspective, it has to be expected. You have to be better than you were a year ago, and he's clearly that right now, and hopefully he can keep on that path.
Yeah, I remember last year you and I were talking a lot about his struggles, and another guy that had a similar profile, not the same body by any stretch of the imagination, but J.J. Hardy. You know,
yeah.
You look back at J.J. Hardy's rookie year and then what he did in his sophomore year, right? Bryce Terang is on a trajectory. I'm not saying he's going to become J.J. Hardy because J.J.'s got a few pounds on him already. But the point being, to stay in the big leagues, you have to get better. And you can tangibly see things that Bryce Terang has taken into his control to get better. He got stronger first and foremost. He is able to fight off pitches. I love his two-strike approach this season. I love his ability to use the opposite field. I love his thoughts on fastballs, given he was one of the worst fastball hitters in baseball last year. He has flipped that into a strength this year. So really happy for Bryce Terang in 2024. Another guy we have to talk about after a great game on Sunday. Let me just read you, before that final ground out in the ninth inning to Alexis Diaz, let me just read you the last 11 balls in play for William Contreras since the weekend began against the Mariners. Okay, here are the last 11 exit velocities before his final ground out tonight. Okay, 112, 110, 108, 105, 105, 104, 105, 105, 102, 104, 105. That is taking a massive leap, and wanted to make sure he keeps that Silver Slugger award on his mantelpiece.
That is just unbelievable. I don't even know. Like, I so wanted to come back at you with something spectacular, but I mean, this guy is sitting in his own league here right now. Let's face it, right? I mean, unbelievable stuff. But here's the thing. Is it unexpected? Absolutely not from William Contreras. Absolutely not. We've talked about this guy in his first year as a Brewer last year and what he was able to do even through the first half of the season, just being the everyday catcher for the first time in his big league career, and then what he was able to accomplish numbers wise on really an all-star level in the second half of the season, great spring. You just know that this guy is poised for great things. Look, MVP for a team, MVP maybe for a league, I would not put that out of the realm of possibility for this guy, because I think he just decided that he was going to dial it up a notch, and he didn't have to, but he knew he could, and I think we're seeing that here right now.
I agree. It's a guy that we've talked about the Mamba Challenge before, of what the Brewers are asking out of him. But I tell you what, I'm going to say this every day until fan voting opens next month. One of those goals for William Contreras this year is to be an all-star. And one way fans can actually help that is stuff the ballot box. And I think this would be an amazing campaign to make him to be the starting catcher in the National League down in Arlington in the All-Star game, a Brewer catcher being the starting catcher in the All-Star game. You're going to go up against the Phillies fans and JT Realmuto. You're going to go up against the Dodger fans and Will Smith, and maybe an entire country with Japan helping out with that too. What an underdog story it would be. And obviously the players and the coaches and the media also have a say in this too, but the fans can really make the loudest voice heard by getting William Contreras to the All-Star game.
100%, man. And we've got some of the best fans, obviously, in Milwaukee. And just the fact that, you know, y'all show up every game. And I know, you know, viewership-wise, you're watching. Listening-wise, you're listening. You're doing your thing. Get this guy in. I agree 100%. Like, look, he can get in all kinds of ways. But to get in through the appreciation vote, like, we know – That'd be awesome, Dom. You're 100% on that.
I would love to see it. And I'm out of time talking with you. Christian Yelich had a home run today. Ho-hum. He's having a great start to his season as well. Craig Kishon, thank you as always, my friend. I don't know if I'm going to talk to you this week, given, like you said, the rain and the forecast this week not looking pretty. But next time, looking forward to it. Thanks as always for your insight, my friend.
We'll be ready. Thanks, Dom.
All right, Craig Kishon here on WTMJ. We're going to hear from the skipper, Pat Murphy, coming up next here on WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
It's a loss. 10-8 the final today. The Reds take game one of a 13-game series for the whole season in 2024. Man, as I'm looking at the standings just from a week and a half in, the NL Central is going to be so much fun. It's stressful, but so much fun. I mean, the Cardinals lost today, but who cares? The Pirates are fun. They're 9-2 for the first time in a long time. I know they were in first place in April last year, believe it, for a full season. But they had O'Neill Cruz get injured, and there was a real thing that they could have been better for longer last season. The Cubs are out to a good start. As much as it's to your chagrin, there'll be plenty of juice in the ballpark on Memorial Day. They're out to a 4-0 lead on the Padres right now, so they're probably going to maybe move to 7-3 to be in second place. The Brewers there at 6-3. The Reds at 6-4, and then the Cardinals at 5-6. And I think the Cardinals are going to be right around 500 all year. Whoever's in last place is going to be right around 500 all year. I think the NL Central truly is the most competitive division in baseball. It's them or the AL East, in my opinion. And I know you think, oh, Dom, the AL East has got some serious, you know, they got big markets. Look, Boston's going to come back down to earth. They're 7-3 right now. They are going to come back down to earth at some point. The AL West, obviously Oakland is there. They're going to wait that down. The White Sox and the AL Central, they're going to wait that down. Miami off to a 1-10 start. The Nats have shown improvement, but that's two teams that aren't going to be competitive this year. And in the NL West, you've got the Rockies, who are 2-8 so far this year. So there are no tanking teams in the NL Central. Every single one of these teams believes they can win the division. With all that being said, let's hear from the skipper, Pat Murphy, after his first divisional game as the Brewers fall 10-8.
Obviously, within range of winning that game, had to be a good takeaway for you.
No, there's no question. You know, I like the guys in the room. I really do, and I like the way they respond. It's a good team across the way, and you can't give them that much rope.
What do you make of just kind of the defensive miscues and errors and some tough plays? It's just not what we've seen up until this point.
Yeah, we really have played incredible defense up until this point. We didn't have a good night there. But, you know, again, we put ourselves in, that's going to happen. And we put ourselves in position to come back. It just wasn't enough. Had some great at-bats, had the right attitude. And, you know, there's a million things we could have done better. But I got no problem with Sal diving for that ball, knowing who the hitter is. You rob him of a hit with that momentum, that changes it. He's such a good base runner. He's liable to steal second anyways and put himself in scoring position. And I'm not having no problem with that. The infield miscues. We got a guy playing third base that hasn't played third base in his career until this year. And, you know, Reese has been off for a year. So, and he had a leg injury that he's rehabbing. So it's not like you just regain your form right away. But, you know, I love both kids, and I'm excited that, you know, they're with us and not anybody else. So, yeah, it's part of it. It's part of it. You don't always play great defense. This was a draining game, but we battled back, and there's a lot to be proud of.
Given all that happened around him, how do you assess Ashby and what he gave you?
Yeah, I thought Ashby was great. I really do. I mean, I didn't expect him to be that good. He threw great changeups. Really established that. I mean, it was a great pitch. Got a lot of swings and misses on it. And, yeah, they hit some balls hard. But for his first Major League start in a while, I thought he did great and deserves to be with us again.
Is the 82 pitches a little surprising for you as far as, like, maybe what you had penciled in for him going?
No.
That was earlier. That was around where you thought maybe?
Well, I was hoping he could get the 82 pitches, you know, or more. So he's definitely in shape. He didn't lose his velo at all and didn't lose his sharpness on any of his pitches. So it wasn't a matter of number of pitches. It was we got ourselves back in the game, and I wanted to give them a different look.
You know, coming in that the red speed is going to put some pressure on the defense. How much did that contribute maybe to a few of the throws?
It might have been one of them, at least the slow roller. And again, Ortiz hasn't played a lot of third base, so... But other than that, I mean, one time we didn't catch the ball. Two times we didn't catch the ball. Throws were good enough. And then the other one was just an errant throw. But that happens. I mean, the red speed we've been dealing with for the last number of years. So it's nothing new to us. It's a very, very good weapon for them.
Well, the job the bullpen did to kind of keep it, tamp them down in the last several innings to keep you guys in.
Bryce threw the ball well. Piamps threw the ball well. Hudson was a little bit unlucky, but, you know, threw the ball pretty well. I thought it was a good performance by the bullpen.
Really good performance by the bullpen, as we mentioned a moment ago, with the one run really only allowed on the homer, then the second home run, of course, on the inside of the Parker. We're going to play some highlights here coming up next as we get ready for our final segment of the program. Brewers fall by a final of 10-8. We'll also get ready to look ahead at what could be a very soggy few days in Cincinnati. Stay with us here on WTMJ.
Ready for this?
Get up!
This?
Get up!
And this?
Get out of here! Gone!
Time for tonight's highlights. Here's Dominic Catronio.
Brewers and Reds for the first time in 2024. It was Aaron Ashby's return to the starting rotation for the first time in 18 months, going up against hard-throwing righty Graham Ashcraft. Defense would be a theme in this one. In fact, an error led to two unearned runs in the second inning. The Brewers committed three errors in today's contest. It's 2-0 Reds as we enter the third inning, but a highlight for Aaron Ashby. He looked better than his line indicates. He got his first K. He got a lot of swings and misses today.
2-0 Reds in the third. The 1-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. He struck him out with a changeup. And Aaron Ashby has his first strikeout since 2022 in the big leagues.
Unfortunately, the fourth inning would fall off the rails for Ashby and the Brewers defense. A pair of stoink singles to open up the frame, a botched sack bunt that was another error for the Brewers, an RBI double, a double steal, another double, and then a bad hop RBI, and you blink, and all of a sudden it's 8-0, and the Brewers had some serious work to do. And in order to get to work, Bryce Terang started the comeback effort with two outs in the fifth.
1-0, high fly ball, right center field, racing back is Fairchild, Back is Thompson at the wall. He reaches up, and it is gone. Bryce Terang with a two-run shot, his first home run of the season, and the Brewers are on the board. 8-2 Cincinnati.
Lane Grindle's call here on WTMJ. They weren't even done in the inning. How about the hottest hitter of the National League, Wild Bill William Contreras?
A one pitch. Ground ball through the right side and into right field for a base hit. Ortiz around third. He's headed for home. Here comes the throw. It's cut off. And the Brewers have played it another run here in the top of the fifth, with an RBI single from William Contreras, and it's an 8-3 ball game.
But then, in the bottom of the fifth inning, Ellie De La Cruz would hit a home run that still hasn't landed for his first homer of 2024. After that, the bullpen would really settle down. J.D. Bukauskas would retire the side. Then in the sixth inning, the Brewers kept the hitting shoes on. A two-out single by Jackson Churio kept the inning alive. Men on first and second for Bryce Terang once again.
2-0 pitch. Terang hits one in the air the other way. Long run and over the head of the left fielder Steer. It's into the corner. One run is in. Churio around third. He's going to score. It is a two-run double for Bryce Terang. He's driven in four tonight. It's a 9-5 ball game.
The Brewers would add another RBI later in the frame as well. Joey Ortiz had an infield hit plus an error to score a run. So all of a sudden it's 9-6. Christian Yelich is at the plate in the seventh.
1-1. Yelich hits it in the air in the left with some thump. Steer is back onto the track. He's at the fence looking up. Goodbye! Yelich makes it a one-run game in the seventh inning with an opposite field two-run home run into the seats. Number four on the season for Christian Yelich. 9-8 Reds.
Are they really going to do this? Come back from down 8-0? It would be their largest comeback in almost 20 years. However, the back-breaking moment was in the bottom of the seventh inning. A gamble by Sal Frelick did not pay off, and it was with the wrong man at the plate. The fastest man in baseball, Ellie De La Cruz.
Ellie De La Cruz lines one into center. Hanging on up. In comes Frelick. Oh, he went into a dive and it got past him. Rolling all the way to the track, and De La Cruz can burn. He's to third. He's being waved around. Adames makes a relay to the plate. It hits the mound. Ellie dives in safely with an inside the park home run.
Chaos. And the smokestacks were burning. That was the backbreaker. The Brewers could never come over the hump. They fall by a final of 10-8. Game 2 is scheduled for tomorrow, but we'll explain why that might be a little soggy after this on your home of the Brewers, 620 WTMJ.
This is Brewers Extra Innings on WTMJ.
Same place, 5:05 is when network coverage begins here on WTMJ for a 5:40 first pitch, as is the case on Wednesday. However, there's a lot of rain in the forecast tomorrow, but we will be ready for you one way or another. If there is rain delay theater, at least here on the flagship station, I will have you covered and entertained, hopefully, until we find out if we will be playing baseball tomorrow. I will be here ready to serve and ready to go for all of the rain delay theater if we get it these next couple of days. Again, it is a night game tomorrow, 5:40 first pitch, 5:40 first pitch on Wednesday as well. And then scheduled for a straight up noon, or I should say 12:05 first pitch on Thursday. And that's supposed to be getaway day. Who knows how many games we're going to get in here. And then the Brewers will be heading to Baltimore to take on the Orioles. And don't fret, you can listen to that game on 620. WTMJ on Friday, and maybe even hear Corbin Burns on Sunday. It looks like he is scheduled to face his former club, and he's going to be burning, to say the least, to face the blue and gold. So the Brewers fall. Tomorrow it is scheduled to be Joe Ross against Frankie Montas. Montas, the opening day starter for the Reds this season, previously in Oakland A White Sox, a Yankee, and he's been hurt quite a bit the last couple of years, but he is healthy and off to a solid start, and another really effective splitter, kind of like the one we saw tonight from Fernando Cruz. That was a disgusting splitter a few times from the Reds reliever. So that'll be a good matchup tomorrow if we get it. And then on Wednesday, Wade Miley is scheduled to return up against Hunter Green. And then on Thursday, it is scheduled to be Freddie Peralta at the helm for the Brewers, and double-checking who it'll be for the Reds. But who knows, with all the rain this week, that could all change in a moment's notice. Quick look around the out-of-town scoreboard here. As we mentioned, that the Cubs are already up 4-0, and they're threatening again out in San Diego. Blake Snell's debut in San Francisco is a short one. 3 innings, 3 hits, 3 runs, 2 walks, 5 strikeouts, but he needed 72 pitches for those 3 innings. 14 batters faced, 72 pitches is not going to last a full season. The Phillies beat the Cardinals in extras today by a final of 5-3. The Astros beat up on the Rangers, getting some revenge, 10-5 in Arlington. The Mets held on and beat the Braves 8-7. Elsewhere here in the Central, Pirates won earlier today 7-4 over the Tigers. And we already mentioned the Cubs as well. And, of course, this was the only head-to-head matchup within the division. That's going to do it for our program here tonight. Back at it tomorrow. Thanks to everybody who listened, texted, or tweeted in. Thanks to our producer, Matt Yazel, and to Craig Kishon for joining us. I'm Dominic Catronio. Brewers fall 10-8. Until next time, keep on swinging.